Welcome in Inside the Icebox here on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel. My name is Joe George alongside Jeremy Branham on Twitter at Joe George Radio at Jeremy Branham. Today's episode is brought to you by Blue Star Tequila, the world's first and only night harvested tequila. You can find it near you at bluestartequila.com. Jeremy, we had to wait to record for the deadline, and well, the Astros didn't disappoint. They trade for Carlos Correa. They trade for Jesus Sanchez on deadline day. So we'll just start. What's your initial thoughts now, about 24 hours removed from what Dana Brown and the Astros did?
I think Dana Brown did a wonderful job improving this team. I mean, you look at what could optimistically be the lineup come like playoff time. It's a pretty deep lineup. He gives Joe Espada some options with like real big leaguers, as opposed to options like, you know, Zach Short and Luis Guillerme and Cooper Hummel. Like he's got like a legit hand to play now, Joe Espada. So I really like what he did. Carlos Correa, because of the ESOC news, like, okay, naturally he just fits in at third base. You get Minnesota to pay down the contract by a third. You give up literally nothing. I guess you gave up a 26-year-old reliever who is in high A ball. So you get him basically for free. I mean, it's a salary dump. You pick up the contract. Minnesota eats a third. Correa has been much better since May. Got off to a terrible start. I think he's going to be really good defensively at third. I think in his 30s, it's a good move for him. And with some of his comments, he's kind of making that known too. Like, I've kind of wanted to move over to third. I think it's going to help his health, knock on wood. The rigors of playing shortstop with his size and his age, you know, kind of take an effect on him. I like the Ramon Urias move. Like, even if you didn't get Correa, I was like, okay, like, he's capable. He's an upgrade. Now he's just going to be a utility guy for you on the infield. I'm sure he'll get some at-bats. That's going to help a lot. And then Jesus Sanchez is the left-handed bat that they really wanted. Like, they wanted some thump from the left-handed side that could hit right-handed pitching. And Jesus Sanchez is that. And for all of the three guys you got, you didn't give up much. Nothing you're losing sleep over. And they also all have club control. You know, Arias is here next year. Sanchez is here next year and the year after. Carlos Correa is here for at least three more years, maybe even more than that if he hits some vesting options. So not only does this help you in the short term, but I think it makes you a more complete roster going forward as well.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. The Correa stuff, we'll do a little behind the scenes here. I told you last week when we were done recording that I had another friend in the media tell me that the Astros were going after Correa. And mm-hmm. He was right. Like, his source was on the money that Carlos Correa was the Astros' target. And yeah, the Paredes stuff really was, I think, the ultimate decision maker in this. And we'll talk about in later in the show, I think, the future of Correa and Paredes and what that means. But like, Dana Brown just goes out there again. He, like you said, he gets three guys he wants, gives up absolutely nothing for him. And the question that we had discussed the most last week on the show was, what will Jim Crane let the Astros do? And he brought in a huge salary. Now, I know there's all this stuff online. I think I saw you tweeting about it where it's like, it seems like the Astros are still under the competitive balance tax. I don't understand. I don't believe that. That seems wrong to me. But Jim Crane opened up his pocketbooks, and it feels exactly like the Jeff Luhnow story from Chandler Rums podcast, about how he wanted Zach Greinke. And every time the deal died, he went to Jim Crane, and Jim Crane was like, all right, we'll eat a little bit more of the money. Like, we'll just keep working on it. That's what it feels like happened here, is Jim Crane said, I love nothing better than a reunion and a splash.
Oh, yeah.
And they eventually got it done.
Yeah. Real quick on the contract stuff. I think Fangraphs is wrong.
I think so too.
Like, I like Kotz a lot. Like, I prefer Kotz over Fangraphs. Spotrac, hit or miss. Spotrac's really good, like, whenever you're trying to find a player's contract real quick. But I think Kotz is the most accurate. I think Spotrac's second. I think Fangraphs is third. And Kotz and Spotrac both have the Astros roughly like $7 million over the luxury tax, which has implications that, you know, are greater than Crane's wallet. Like, if you lose Framber Valdez in free agency and you give him the qualifying offer, they will. That's a fourth rounder instead of a first rounder if you lose him as compensation. So that does have like tangible, what does it mean for the organization, you know, different than the Crane wallet, whatever. But that's a conversation for a different day. You're right. Like, Crane saying that the window's always open while I'm here, he proved that yesterday. Let me go into luxury tax for the second season in a row. Like, there's still a population of Astro fans that, oh, Crane's cheap. He's not willing to do it a second year. Well, he's done it. He's gone into the competitive balance tax now for the second season. He's only going to do it for splashes. Like, he's not going to do it for the Alex Verdugos of the world. Will he do it for Carlos Correa? Yeah. And he did it for Correa. And I also think that Crane, once he got Correa in the fold, it's like, okay, let's just go all in, because there was rumors about Dylan Cease. He's making a substantial amount of money. So it was like, once he dipped into that pool, let's just go all in. I think Dana Brown should have pretty good, was reserved and didn't trade the farm for Cease. And I think that's a good idea. The other aspect of it too, from like a Crane perspective, I was reading this morning, I think it was a story in The Athletic, like how it all happened. Crane was on the phone with whoever's like the controlling owner there in Minnesota making the deal happen. So I think Dana Brown probably put the framework, which there wasn't a lot of framework here. They traded some 26-year-old low A, reliever that they signed off the streets like 3 months ago. So Crane got on the phone with whoever was the decision maker in Minnesota and negotiated this like it was a business deal. Like, hey, we're interested in Correa. Let's make Correa happen, but let's find a number that we can both agree to. So Jim Crane got it done. So it's not like Jim Crane spent. Jim Crane likes the shiny new object, in this case, an old object that he lost once and now gets to return. But then third, he was on the phone. Talking to the whoever was making the decision there in Minnesota, buying down the contract. So businessman Crane was a businessman yesterday, getting Correa at the lowest cost he possibly could.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to hear how involved he is in this process, because, like, again, like you said, he has to be the one to pull this deal. It's a nothing trade. It's a straight salary dump for an ownership group that is apparently like, I think it was like $450 million in debt is what people were saying. So like the Twins made the most trades in Major League Baseball over the last 48 hours. They unloaded like half their roster. Everyone besides Joe Ryan, basically, they just unloaded everything. And the Astros are the benefactor of that. And with Paredes out, now Correa comes in to third base. From, he hasn't been healthy the entire year. I think there's still some questions about that. I do agree with you about moving to third base can keep him healthier. But what do you think of the player the Astros are getting in return, not just the memories that the fans will have?
I think he's still capable of being a really good baseball player. Is he in the prime of his career? No. Do I think he's that far removed? No. He was really, really good last year.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at his offensive numbers a season ago, and they were like some of the best of his career. I'm a baseball savant guy. Go look at his baseball savant last year, and it's like, ooh, that's sexy. I mean, he had a 905 OPS last year. He had a 151 OPS plus. Like, that's legit. Well, Branham, that was last year. That's not this year. That's a fair point. This year, the numbers haven't been great offensively. The OPS plus is below 100, which we know is below the average offensive player. But whenever you start to dive in on it a little bit more, he got off to a really, really bad start. He was hitting 215 after March. His OPS was 579 after March. Since May, he's been pretty dang good. I pulled the numbers on it yesterday, and like the average is like 280 since May. The OPS is like above 750 since May. Like that helps you a lot. And again, this isn't an upgrade over Paredes, because Paredes is hurt. Mauricio Dubon's been playing third base. So like the upgrade is that. Like, there was some dude named Doolittle on ESPN today that like the Astros didn't get better. What?
That's like, crazy.
What do you mean they didn't get better? They got a left-handed bat that didn't exist on their team, and they got a third baseman, and it means that Zach Short isn't going to play. So I think Correa has a chance to still have a very good offensive season the rest of the way. There are some trends with his May, June, July that are trending in that direction. He's a year removed from a really good offensive year. Now, didn't play a ton of games last year, but had a really good offensive year. I still think that the upside with Correa is there.
What do you think Jesus Sanchez is going to fit in? Because it feels like we saw that Dana Brown says he's going to play left, going to play some right. Against righties for Cam Smith and just gives them some days off. Yeah. Cam Smith's obviously played a ton. It does feel like the long-term big picture of this. Mm-hmm. I feel like Altuve just kind of ends up back at second base, to be honest with you. With Sanchez in left, Cam Smith in right, Yordan's your DH, Correa's at third. That just kind of feels like the eventual everyone stays healthy and is back domino, how it falls out.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's a spot as options. I think a lot of times as like baseball fans, we get this is your starting nine and this is what it's going to be every day, when there are way more factors than that. I mean, who is your starting pitcher? Fromber, Hunter Brown, this team believes in pitching and defense. Like, do they want Altuve to play a lot of games with those two guys on the mound? Don't know. Who's pitching for the other team? You know, Jesus Sanchez is dreadful against lefties. I mean, he's awful. Like, his splits are egregious, but that's okay. They didn't trade him because he hits lefties well. They traded for him because he hits righties well. So if there's a lefty on the mound, it's hard for me to imagine Jesus Sanchez being in the starting lineup when you have Cam, even when you have Chaz. Like, I'd rather have Chaz against lefties. Chaz has good numbers against lefties. So I'd rather have Chaz against lefties than Sanchez. That's why a spot is going to be able to play this. I saw McTaggart's tweet where it's like he's going to platoon some in right. Correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe I'm the idiot here, but I always think of platoon as like, okay, I have two guys that are going to play right. One's going to play against lefties and one's going to play against righties. Like, Cam Smith's not going to be part of a platoon. Do they give him more days off because he's hitting a rookie wall and he's played more baseball games in a calendar year than he ever has played in his life? Yeah, of course. But he's not going to be in a platoon. Like, he's still going to play at minimum four, maybe even five games a week. Do they try to get him off his feet? That way, the wall, you can push it further away or he can kind of regroup. Sure. But he's not going to be in a straight-up platoon with Jesus Sanchez. I think while Jordan's gone, Sanchez plays mostly left. I think you're right about Altuve playing some second. Maybe that changes a little. You still have the DH at your disposal until Jordan comes back. So, like, they'll use that a little bit too. I think Arias is going to play a decent amount, especially while Jordan is gone. Like, Caratini's been good. Yiner's been better offensively. So Espada's going to have a lot of options. I don't think that standard, this is my daily nine, is going to be something that is – an everyday thing. But I do think Altuve is going to play more second.
Before we get to, I guess, kind of the big picture of this team, the other part of the deadline is, you mentioned it, Dylan Cease. Spencer Arrighetti was apparently what they were asking for, the Padres and other prospects, for Cease, a rental player. I mean, I love the idea of Dylan Cease because he's got nasty stuff. You think about what he could be for the Astros with how they help pitchers out so much. A little confusing also because, like, the Padres traded half their farm system again. Like they do every single deadline. I thought it was strange that they were so close to moving Cease, and Suarez was rumored at 1.2 to another trade. Are you disappointed they didn't trade for Cease, the Astros, or because, Arrighetti and prospects, we don't know exactly what prospects were mentioned, that they didn't make that final push and get that thing over and done?
I mean, the fact that Cease and Alcantara didn't get traded at all lets you know that Major League Baseball felt that the price was too high on them, right?
And Joe Ryan, too. And
Ryan as well. Like, the upper echelon starters, none of them got moved. Ryan didn't get moved. Alcantara didn't get moved. Cease didn't get moved. So that tells me that those teams probably had a price on them that was too high. And every team, not just the Astros, were not compelled to pay it. So, and then we saw the reports of, like, what it would have cost for Cease. It's like Arrighetti and three more prospects. Swab said that Yannick was one of those three. So it's like, give me 4.5 years of Arrighetti as opposed to a half season of Cease. I think you get caught up in the moment, hour before the deadline. The Astros are at the 1 yard line with Cease, and it's like, yeah, let's get it done. And then it doesn't happen. It kind of, pops the balloon a little bit. But I think if you can step back and, take the big picture view, I'm happy they didn't pay that price for Cease. I do think it's a fair critique. And maybe critique is too strong a word, but I do think it's fair to bring up, why did it have to be a top of the, starting pitcher market? Why did it have to be Cease, Alcantara, Ryan? Why couldn't it have been Charlie Morton? Why couldn't it have been that Adrian Hauser guy? Somebody that would help you, he doesn't have the sizzle, doesn't have the name value. Maybe he would compete with Arrighetti for the number three starter, but somebody that certainly would help.
Yeah, especially with what – it's fair to put Kikuchi in that kind of category last year. Like, he's not, like, a top guy, but he's closer to what Hauser has done. I mean, Hauser's been electric this year, but he's closer to the guys that we saw move to the deadline this year. And, yeah, I think that would be that's a fair critique. But as they're positioned right now, I mean, the Astros, are going to be in a three-game series in the playoffs. So, Fromber and Hunter are going, and if it goes the way it did last year, the third guy won't pitch. So, now –
Well, that's a bad scenario.
I know, but it's just what happened last year. It's a fact. I don't think that'll happen this year. But the other one is, I wonder, too, if it's like, if you're only going for the big fish, I do have some hope that it means there is some general positivity within the Astros organization about Arrigetti, who will be back with the Astros next week, and then Christian Javier, who should be back the following week, that they think that between those two guys, one of them can fill the third spot in the rotation, and that's why it was either big fish or nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I would push back on that. Like, Arrigetti has the broken thumb, recovering from a broken thumb. So, like, his isn't arm-related, per se. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not Tommy John or labrum or, you know, TJ for Luis Garcia and Javier. Like, they're coming back from that. Garcia a year sooner than Javier, although it looks like Javier is going to beat him back. I think it's hard to project that Javier and Garcia are going to be, like, who they were. So, like, there is the unknown there of guys coming off major arm injuries. They're like, is that guy going to be capable of being a starter? And, look, minor rehab numbers, like, don't matter much. I think they matter a little. You know, I think that they do have some merit. But Javier has been, you know, he's been getting hit a little bit. Is he working on things? I certainly hope so. Only he and the Astros could answer that. Garcia, you know, 2 years removed from Tommy John. Is he expected to be who he was? Arrigetti, I think, gives you your best hope because it wasn't as major an injury. But his has been more flashes. You know, he hasn't put together a full season. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. last year was a rookie. This year he got hurt after two starts in that, you know, freak fluke injury, which how's he not back by August?
It's great.
But you have options. You have options. It's just they're all unknowns. Arrigetti hadn't done it before. Javier Garcia, major arm surgery. I'd feel a lot better if Brandon Walter didn't come down with elbow inflammation or elbow soreness because he looked like a bona fide middle of the rotation guy. That made me feel safer. But they're saying he's going to be back, and they feel like they avoided danger there. So you have candidates. You don't have like a guy that you're locking into that number three spot right now today, but you do have multiple options.
All right, we'll take our break here. We'll hear from our friends at Blue Star Tequila, teach you what night harvesting is all about. When we get back, we'll talk about the future of this season, how the trade deadline impacts the Astros, but also how it impacts 2026 and beyond with the acquisition of Carlos Correa. That's all coming up next year on Inside the Icebox on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel.
In the highlands of Jalisco, as the fierce heat of day fades into dusk, the sun dips below the horizon, and our jimadores begin their work. Harvesting our precious agave azul beneath the glow of stars, while the night air is cool and calm. Away from the harsh heat of the sun, we protect our agave's freshness, locking in essential natural properties and sweetness, and preserving its unique flavor profile. This world-first practice has been warmly embraced by our jimadores, who relish the soothing embrace of evening's cool air as they work beneath the moonlight. 100% agave azul. Night harvested, unfiltered, and additive-free. We invite you to taste the Blue Star difference.
All right, before we get to the future of this season, I'm going to throw two names at you. One you're going to be ready for. One, it's happening as we're doing this show, of potential pickups. Ryan okay. Pressly, would you do it?
He's better than Neris, I think, but he's
I think so
bad.
Too.
Yeah. Like, I don't think I'd do it. And it's not because like he's not better than Neris. It's more of like if you're committing to that, you're kind of committing to it the rest of the year. I think like you're not bringing him back and then DFAing him if he's bad. I would be interested in the buyout market because this happens after the deadline. Teams that are like trying to avoid the CBT or trying to shed salary, like they'll get rid of some players who are in the final year of their contract, trying to save a few bucks. So I do think that the Astros can upgrade a few areas in the buyout market. Pressly to me just doesn't do enough. Is he better than the Neris? Probably. Is he better than Ort? I don't know. It kind of ruins your flexibility if you do something like that. So I'm probably out on Pressly.
The other one just happened about 10 minutes ago as we're doing this show and recording it. Marcus Stroman has been released from the New York Yankees. That is a guy that's been connected to the Astros in the past. He has like a 6-something ERA this year. It's not been pretty. But just on, you know, surface level here, would you consider a Marcus Stroman acquisition for the Astros?
I would need him to enter free agency first. He's still making a decent amount of money this year. Yeah. So I need the Yankees to buy that out. Like, I'm certainly not picking up the contract, but let's assume he, you know, clears waivers, all that. I mean, if they released him, I think they've already committed to paying the contract. I hadn't really looked into Stroman much. I mean, if you can get him for a minor league deal, I'd be more interested in that, because I do think that the Astros could use an arm in the rotation just to eat innings, mm-hmm. as opposed to a one inning guy in the bullpen. So I'd be more interested in Stroman, assuming that they're, you know, league minimum, over Presley. But Stroman doesn't do a whole lot for me either. You know, mid 30s, numbers aren't great. Meh.
Attitude's not great.
Is that true? Like, I don't know that. Like,
well, wasn't it because before the season he was publicly saying about he wouldn't go into the bullpen? When they were talking,
McCullers did that too.
Kind of. Yeah, well, but you kind of get the benefit of the doubt. I think McCullers does, like, because he's an Astro. Like he's been an Astro. Marcus Stroman has bounced around a little bit. I feel like when you're raised in a system, I feel like you have a little more leverage to say, like, you don't want to do something. Versus a guy who could be DFA'd any day now, and just was released by the Yankees. All right, let's talk about this year. So you add Correa, you add Sanchez. Was it Urias? Is that how you say it? I forgot.
I think it's Urias. I don't know. He's got a weird saying.
You had those three guys. You got, you know, the injury guys are all kind of TBD. Jeremy Pena is back. Yordan Alvarez feels like it's getting a little bit closer. Jake Meyer still feels like a ways away. But then you got the pitchers too. So how far can the Astros go this year? Like, not
think they can win at all.
I think so too.
I haven't changed off of that though. Like, I've been there the entire year. I haven't wavered off of that once.
I think after the Paredes injury, it felt a little more unrealistic.
I mean, it hurt your odds. Yeah, sure.
But Correa,
I still felt
fixes
like they could win it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all a market, right? I mean, we see the betting market. We're in that world. I felt better than Vegas about the Astros World Series odds really all year. The Paredes injury, you know, it makes the odds longer because you're without a solid bat. You're without like a decent third baseman. No, but I think Correa replaces it. I mean, I'd rather have Isak play third if he's 100%. Obviously he's not. Like, I think Isak is a better offensive player than Carlos Correa today. I think Correa is going to be better defensively. But no, I think they could win it all. Like, you have a chance to have a pretty complete offense. Now, it feels maybe even like, you know, it feels daunting. It feels maybe unrealistic because Yordan's played 20-something games. Meyer's calf, you know, is barking at him. Other injuries come into play too. Like, the Astros probably are going to have other injuries. That's just the nature of the business. Correa is injury prone. But optimistically, the Astros offense has a chance to run out a lineup come playoff time that's pretty dangerous. They have options too. Like, they have right-handed guys that hit lefties. They have left-handed guys that hit righties. I like a rotation that is led by Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez. I think that is scary to an opposing team. They have the back-end relievers, too, of Abreu and Hader. You know, I think Abreu and Hader can give you three innings out of those two guys. So, you know, get you through six and turn it over to Abreu and Hader with a lead. I like my chances. So, no, I haven't wavered off of it. The ebbs and flows are there. You're right. But I absolutely think the Astros have World Series winning potential.
Yeah, I think so. And I think if you want to talk potential versus expectations, my expectations for this team would be to return to the ALCS. I think that I know baseball's weird, and you know it is potentially a three-game series you're starting off with in the wild card round. Even as they win the AL West, but I would say like my expectations for this team would be to go back to the American League Championship Series this year at a minimum. I think they've got the talent. They've made the moves at the deadline. I love the flexibility they have, and frankly, like, I'm kind of unimpressed with most of the American League. I mean, Boston just had a huge dud of a deadline. They haven't been able to acquire a new first baseman. You know, they didn't go get Joe Ryan. Yes, they have Crochet, but like they don't have that top of the guy, other guy on their team. The Yankees are a giant nothing burger for me. I don't really believe in whatever comes out of the Central, like with the Tigers. I think they're closer to what they've been of recent. I'm not a believer. Like, they've been cooking on Javier Baez's resurgence, and he's off the cliff again. Like, I think the Astros are the best team in the American League. I don't, and maybe in the Blue Jays too, obviously. Like, it feels like we could very easily be seeing George Springer versus Carlos Correa in the ALCS this year, which I love.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of even teams in the American League. Like, I think that they're all on similar tiers. I think I'm a little bit higher on the Tigers than you are. I think that they have a lot of good young talent, the best pitcher in the American League too. So that
helps.
I don't think you're facing them in a short series like you were last year. So like that's encouraging, and I do think that should be the goal for the Astros. Like the rest of the regular season should be, let's get one of those top two spots so we can avoid the wild card round. Obviously, that's something you should do, right? I think the Blue Jays are. I mean, Blue Jays are good. Their offense is good. They have a solid rotation. Yankees kind of have holes, but you know, you have to take them seriously. Aaron Judge is the best player in the American League, best offensive player in the American League. You know, we knock on Seattle. I like what Seattle did at the deadline. Like, they have a good rotation.
They add two
offensive bats in Naylor and Suarez. Like, they're a legitimate team. I think they'll make the playoffs. Hopefully, the Astros can hold them off. Now, offense does go to Seattle to die. So, I do think that Suarez and Naylor's numbers will probably go down just because it's the worst offensive ballpark in all of baseball. Numbers support that. And Texas, look, I mean, Texas' rotation's pretty dang good, man. Like, they added an arm to a rotation that has DeGrom, Eovaldi, Leiter, and, you know, Rocker didn't pitch all that well last night. But that's a formidable rotation. Their offense has been disappointing, but it's an offense that has upside. So I do think that the Rangers have to be taken seriously, too. It wouldn't shock me if the American League West gets three teams in the playoffs. They wouldn't.
No, it wouldn't shock me either, especially if, you know, this Judge injury is a little more severe than they've let on. The Yankees added a lot at the deadline. They made a ton of moves that
they had to help. Too.
Yeah, they needed to. So it's like, who falls off? Is it the Yankees and the Red Sox, or is it the Mariners and the Rangers are catching those teams? Because I do think the Astros are going to win the West, the Blue Jays are going to win the East, and just kind of see what happens with the four teams around it for a couple wild card spots. But I mean, regardless, it's going to be awesome. Like I've gone to a couple Astros games this year. I haven't gone yet as a media member. I have not decided yet if I'm going to purchase a ticket or go as a media member for Monday the 11th. Like, Bregman's return to Minute Maid, or Daikin, whatever, and Carlos Correa's return to Houston is going to be electric. It's going to be one of the most fun nights at a regular season game I think we've ever seen. Just before the game, like, The video for Bregman and then the celebration for Correa when he comes on the field is going to be awesome. I almost feel bad for Alex Bregman.
Stop.
I feel like his moment's ruined a little bit.
His moment?
It's his moment. It's his thank you. Instead, people are going to care way more about Correa.
How come we're not talking about this Jesus Sanchez reunion to Miami on Monday night? How come we're overlooking that?
Yeah, it's not.
All the 800 people that are going to be there.
Yeah, like.
No, you're right. Like, I mean, it's going to be.
Yeah, it's quiet.
Gonna be
cool.
It's going to be – it'll be a fun night on the 11th. I'm not crying, you know, not crying over Alex Bregman, though. Like,
no.
His moment, return to Houston, is he's making $40 million, half of it deferred. I think they should boo Bregman. Like, I'm on the boo Bregman side of things. It's term of endearment in sports. I think Bregman would like it. Now, during the highlight video, once the highlight video is over, But the moment that he steps up to bat – boo, yeah,
so we can hit.
Like, why do people get so offended by that? By the
so
way,
so we can hit it. Oh, I don't.
Like, dare you treat a former icon that way? It's sports. It's fun. It's entertaining. Yeah, Bregman would get a kick out of it.
I think I kind of like the first at bat being sacred a little bit, because there's going to be another hat tip, and like we saw that with Tucker. I think once something happens positive for that player, it should flip. Like, as soon as Tucker hit the home run that he had in the second game of that series, I think it was, like, it's no more Mr. Nice Guy. Like, get rid of the King Tuck crowns. Like, it's like, once you've damaged your former team, you can't celebrate anymore. Like, they're the enemy now. Now, if they strike out four times in that game, you can round of applause every time they come up to bat. But, like, once they do a little bit of damage, I think the niceness should go away. I'm with you, but people get so offended.
It's weird. Like, how dare you boo him? Who cares?
Yeah.
Like it's, he's not going to take it personally. I promise you. He'll be okay. He'll sleep fine tonight. Like, I'm not throwing a beer bottle at him. I'm not putting him in any sort of danger. Yeah. I'm just giving him a playful boo. It's okay.
All right. Let's talk 2026 here. So, Correa wants to play third base. Mm-hmm. You could trade Pena and move Correa back to shortstop. I think that's unlikely.
Yeah.
I think the question is really, what are you doing with Paredes in 2026? Like, Correa is your third baseman for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
Is Paredes your second baseman?
See, I don't like Paredes at second. I haven't
seen him. Can Paredes play first base?
Yeah, he can play first. If he can play third, he can play first. If you can play anywhere on the infield, you can play first.
Then I think they should eat Christian Walker's contract. I think it's really simple.
Eat it? No.
Eat it, trade it.
Trade it's fine, but if you can, you're going to eat $40 million for a guy who's turned it on in the summer? Absolutely not.
But like, would you rather have Paredes or Walker at first base next year?
Those are my only two options.
What else? What other option would there be?
I think there's some other options to kind of game this. Okay. I mean, initially I thought about Correa at second. I think he could handle second base, but if Correa is like, I'll waive it to play third. Like, we don't know his feelings about playing second.
Yeah. So that was my initial thought too.
I mean, I would entertain that. I'd entertain Correa at second before I entertain Isak there. I don't like Isak's lateral movement. I don't think he'd be a very good second baseman. I know he's played there some in the bigs, like 60 something games. I don't think his metrics are good. I remember looking at him once, but I kind of forget what they are. Plus like, The issue that I have with like trading one of those guys, I mean, if you can get like a King's ransom for Pena, okay, let's discuss. But he still has 2 years left on his contract. Like,
yeah.
Dana Brown has shown that he's willing to trade young players that are about to leave. He's done it only one time though, and he did it right before the final year of Tucker's club control. So I think it's too early for Pena. You know, and Dana's also said like we're going to work to try to get a contract done with him, but you know, I don't put much weight and value into that. I don't like the idea of trading any of them because, look, injuries happen. Like, Isak has had two hamstring injuries this year, one that's going to cost him the rest of the year in multiple months. Carlos Correa's entire career, he's been injury prone. Walker looks like he's pretty durable, but he's in his mid-30s. Pena, like, fluke injury for him to miss a month, but that shows you, like, even the dudes who are in the best shape and the best condition can miss a month. Altuve's had stints on the IL. So I'm not a fan of trading him because I like the depth. Now, how do you get them all in the lineup if they're all healthy, I think is the question. Like, you know, you kicked – I kicked around the Correa at second. I don't know if he'd be open to that. The trading is interesting. Like, Walker to me would be the obvious one because he's making $20 million. For the next 2 years, you know, maybe somebody in the West Coast, hey, you know, he finished strong. That is on the table. Here's one that I haven't heard that, you know, just throw it out there. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I haven't seen this scenario talked about because we kind of forget about this guy playing in the field. But what if you open up the DH spot by making Yordan Alvarez your most of the time left fielder? Kind of use him in left field the way that you use an Altuve in left field, where he plays left field at Minute Maid. And, you know, DH is on the road, and you're kind of always, you know, changing the lineup to keep guys fresh. Where Yordan's in left, you move Altuve back to second, and then you kind of rotate that DH to get guys' days off. You can use Isak there. You can use Walker there. It's a way to get guys off their feet. You probably don't want Yordan playing more than 130 games anyways because – he's a ticking time bomb. Like, he's going to get hurt. So I don't hate that idea.
No, I think that's really interesting. It just feels like they are pretty set on Altuve playing in left field. And I think that part of that decision is that they don't want Yordan left. Dana Brown said that when Yordan was healthy before the season, that they pretty much wanted him to be the everyday DH. So it's such a change. And that's where I think you're right. Like, trading one of those guys immediately in the offseason would probably be a mistake. Now, well, because whether Correa doesn't want to play short and wants to play third base, or what are you going to do with Paredes and injuries and all these different things. The only thing with Walker, I would say, is like if you from analytically like are seeing what he's done this year and think that he's going to just keep sliding down, like that probably is the safest move if you were to move one of them. Really, the reality is like you're right. One of these guys will be hurt. And yeah, okay, then you have one of the best pinch hitters in baseball potentially in Isak Paredes. Like in the bottom of the ninth, if you need him to replace Jake Myers, like you can find a way to get at bats and do different things. And it'd be the best thing for the Astros is you keep everyone and everyone's healthy. And it's like, well, how do we play all these guys? Like,
right. And that's really only an issue into the playoffs. Like you're going to get guys days off. Altuve is late in his career. He needs days off. Walker needs days off. Correa's injury prone needs days off. Isak hamstring issues needs days off. Yordan needs days off. So I think a great way to keep them all fresh is just rotate that DH spot. And I know, and look, Yordan rules. I've wanted Yordan nowhere near the outfield, but roster construction has to change your mind on certain things. And like, look, not every game over a regular season is must win. So you can use that to be flexible. And then whenever you do get into must win games, if they're all healthy, what a great problem that is. And then you figure it out then. You know, Jesus Sanchez is kind of a factor too, because if all those guys are healthy, Jesus Sanchez is not factoring into the outfield there. So no, but it's a good problem. Like, you have some depth. Walker to me makes the most sense if you had to trade somebody because he's making the most money. Now, it would probably be a salary dump and you're probably not getting anything in return, but it does allow you to be flexible with some money too, though, because, you know, all of a sudden $20 million opens up.
All right, I have a, you threw one. I mean, I have one for you to fix your Jesus Sanchez problem.
Okay.
Is Cam Smith athletic enough to be a center fielder?
Yeah, I think he is.
I think so too.
But I mean, you still have Myers, and Myers has had a great year.
I know, but like, yeah, I know. Like, they have a great problem all of a sudden. Now we're, because it's funny, because you got 18 guys on the injured list as we're discussing this. So like, we're obviously sunshine and rainbows a little bit of what 2026 could look like and beyond. But I think you have really interesting flexibility in your roster, and I think that's the other part of this deadline that's really positive. That look, let's say Dana Brown was like, okay, Carlos, you're going back to shortstop. We're trading Jeremy Pena because we're using you to replace Framber Valdez. Like, we're getting a high caliber starting, like, elite starting pitcher. Maybe that's Joe Ryan. Like, maybe Boston does something stupid and, like, I don't think Crochet would be available, but like,
no.
Maybe if someone of like that caliber available, and Pena's the way you get it done. Like, you have options. You can trade multiple guys to fill the Framber spot in the rotation. And the other thing I think is interesting is what you said earlier, thinking about 2026, is, well, if they're in the luxury tax, does that stop Dana Brown and Jim Crane for just keeping Framber or going after a rental, or especially with someone like Skubal who's going to be available soon? Like if they're already in the luxury tax, like, do they just put all their chips in, especially when we know they're probably not playing baseball in 2027?
Well, you're on that kick.
I hope I'm wrong. They just announced the All-Star Games at Wrigley Field. I can't wait to go. It's going to be awesome.
I just don't think that you can operate that way as a general manager. Like, let's just do all of – let's make all of our moves knowing there's going to be a potential work stoppage, or an inevitable, I guess, in this way, work stoppage. Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating offseason. Like, there's so many different avenues. Worst case scenario, you just don't do anything and you have 10 capable offensive starters. Oh, no.
Yeah,
what a terrible problem to have whenever you lead all of Major League Baseball in injuries. So, like, I'm okay with that problem. Yeah, I mean, Pena would be an attractive piece to trade. I don't think they'll go that route. I think that they, especially with 2 years of cloak control, Dana has like said he wants to sign up, but Dana says a lot of stuff that doesn't come to fruition. I think that if you had to make a move and you're gun to my head, you're forced to make a move, I think Walker would be the move, and you just like take air in return, like trade him wherever. Like, hey, Freddie Freeman's hurt or whatever. Like, what, you know, the Angels want a guy. I don't know. But you trade Walker away, let's just assume for nothing, and then it opens up $20 million, and then you can spend that $20 million on the best starting pitcher that you can get for $20 million.
Yeah, it'll be – I mean, it's going to be a fun offseason. And it's going to be a fun rest of this season. Like, the fact that I think the – it is funny to me, just, like, the idea of – now I feel like every time a former Astro signs a contract that includes a no-trade clause, I think we just have to assume they're coming back at some point. Like, if Bregman goes out and signs a contract and has a no-trade clause, we're like, yep, see you in 2 years, buddy. Like, it's – I think it's very funny that the Astros, two of the biggest moves they've made of recent memory have been for – Justin Verlander, who left, and Carlos Correa, who left. It really doesn't happen in sports like this. It's very strange.
No. I mean, reunion tours, very, very strange.
Yeah.
But I mean, it goes to show a little bit of the personality of Crane. You know, he likes the shiny object, and he likes the shiny object who's done a lot for the organization. Because, I mean, both of those guys you mentioned, Verlander could be arguably the greatest starting pitcher in Astros history, depending on what your weights are and, you know, your variables are for that. I'd consider him the best starting pitcher in Astros history. We don't have the wins of Oswalt, don't have the career ERA. Well, he's close in career ERA, and he anchored two World Series winning teams that no one else has. And then Correa's the greatest shortstop, who's now going to play third in Astro franchise history. So it's, I mean, it's he likes a good reunion tour, I guess, which is actually good business, right? Like all these concerts that break up and they come back together and they go on tour. Don't they do like huge numbers and huge sales?
Yeah, the Astros are tweeting out the new Space City or whatever jerseys with Correa on them, saying they're available now at the team shop. I'm like, there you go. Those things are going to be selling like hotcakes.
Poor Brendan Rodgers, too. Hey, about that number, you're concussed to have a broken nose because you try to fill the routine grounder to short. We're going to strip you of your number, by the way.
Yeah, I think he has to understand.
He might be DFA'd soon. Hey, if you say weirder, no, we're going to cut you.
Yeah, it would have been weirder for Correa to wear four, honestly, like to wear a different number coming up. Like, I mean, it's still strange seeing like highlight videos when they did the Tucker montage and you see him in the three.
Yeah,
it was still strange. It's like I forgot that he did that.
I
was gonna say this for last, but I did see your tweet asking this question. You just mentioned Justin Verlander.
Yeah,
I mean, the numbers in his recent starts have been pretty good, but the Giants in a weird place, and it does feel like there's a chance that Verlander is DFA'd. I think he goes back to the Tigers.
Huh.
If it happens, or the Cubs do something very funny, like that because they nearly traded for him first in 2017 before the Astros did, like, would you entertain a Verlander thing?
Again? He's probably in the same, like you asked me about Stroman earlier. He's probably in that conversation where it's kind of like, if you need an innings eater, why not? I mean, sure. Like, I wouldn't pick up the salary. Like, they would have to be a veteran's minimum type of thing. I mean, why not? Why not? I think he's equivalent to Stroman in terms of production, but I would be more interested in Verlander than Stroman because Verlander's here. Everybody knows him. He is another veteran. Like, I think he'd be a good sounding board to a lot of these young pitchers. I still think he's capable of eating some innings. But no, I wouldn't pick up the contract. I would be more open to Verlander than Stroman. At the same time, I wouldn't want Verlander to make a playoff start unless he just has an end of the year that's amazing. Maybe he can do a little LeBron thing where he goes away for 2 weeks and comes back rejuvenated, finding the fountain of youth or whatever.
Well, he's only got a couple. There's only a couple weeks left in the season, it feels like, at this point.
Yeah, a little two-week hiatus and then come back strong.
All right, he's Jeremy Branham. You can catch him every day, Monday through Friday, on the Killer Bees on social media at Jeremy Branham. Every week here on Inside the Icebox on Fridays on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel and the radio version that starting next week will move to 7 o'clock on Fridays. My name is Joe George. Find me on all social media platforms at Joe George Radio. Thanks again to our friends at Blue Star Tequila for sponsoring this podcast, the world's first and only night harvested tequila. You can find it near you at BlueStarTequila.com. We'll be back with you guys next week talking all things Astros. Peace.